All right, guys, welcome back to another episode of Persuasion by the Pint. Jonathan Taylor, along with
Sean McCool, and we have Felix the cat. Oh, that's not, that doesn't say cat, does it?
I don't want to remember my name. It's Felix K.O. Just imagine it was the letter K and O.
Okay.
So K.O.
Okay. K-O. I was either going to go K.O. or Chow. Like, I wasn't sure.
Yeah, usually it's one or the other. So it's very synonymous, but K.O. is the right way to pronounce it. But Felix the cat is also the other way that ingrains to a lot of people's minds as well. So,
right. You know,
there's different ways to remember. So it's a nice thing.
From a neuromarketing standpoint, that's good stuff, because we're going to be talking
about that. Yeah, I guess my parents were ahead of the game. They kind of figured that out when they did the naming the babies.
Yeah, you lived into it, right? Because that's what happens, you know?
Yeah, probably part of the DNA there.
Yeah, although Jonathan, you didn't live up to your name. I guess Taylor is spelled different, but still,
Hey, common names are easy to remember too, so you know, like, you don't forget those names as well.
He does tailor solutions for his clients, though.
Taylor.
Oh, see, customized. There you go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, Felix, I want to introduce you. So, you've been, just to give you a background, so that's K.O. Oh, there we go. You got a very brief applause.
There we go.
So, Felix, that's spelled C-A-O, last correct name, and you've been featured on top media outlets like Huffington Post, Adweek. You've got 15 years experience in marketing and business, most of which is in the tech space, leading to the acquisition of App Portfolio. And so you're going to be sharing you've got a huge background in marketing, but also the thing that really drew our attention is neuromarketing. And we're going to be talking about the buying habits of people and why most of our buying decisions are focused in the primal brain. Those correct where most of our decisions are made, and we're going to be talking about that. So this can be really interesting today, and what marketers, what business entrepreneurs can understand and how to tailor. There you go, Sean. I use tailor their marketing to
pick up on that quick
to hit that primal brain. So Felix, it's a pleasure to have you coming on today and share a little bit about your background. You've got some background in biological science, psychology.
Correct.
So so we'll get into that. But first, we got to get to the good stuff, which is talking about our brews.
Yes, indeed. Perfect. Yes, indeed. So we always let our guests go first. So Felix, you gave us a little sneak peek right before we kicked off. But I want you to tell the people what you have as your beverage of choice today.
Absolutely. So, you know, this is very fitting for your show, Persuasion by the Pint. So I went with Peroni. So it's a very, delicious Italian beer. So this is something that certainly hits the spot. It's a great way to start the weekend, and it's pretty much good for any time, actually. And why better not have it on a particular podcast and a show that really resonates with your name?
Yeah, it's alliterated, so that's great. Like, that's Persuasion by the Pint with, what is it? Peroni.
And that's that's an Italian beer, right?
Yeah, Peroni. It's Italian. That's correct.
Peroni. I know this because I've got a client. It's an Italian manufacturing company. So back when I used to be able to travel, you know, before everything hit the fan.
Seems so long ago, doesn't it?
So I used to go down and visit them every month or so. I go down to this company, and there's some guys from Italy. And so I'd always take them out to this little Italian place. And that's all they would drink is Peroni. That's it. Yeah. Nothing else.
Yeah, it's one of the most famous beers out there, right? Yeah, so I think really in Italy, it's really well known. So it's a good choice to go with.
And it's in a green bottle. Like, how can you go wrong, right?
That's right.
I mean, there you go. There's another catch to it.
Yeah, because it makes you think Heineken. What is it?
Or Perrier.
Perrier. Mm-hmm. There you go.
A little stronger than Perrier.
Yeah, I would. A little bit stronger. Definitely agree with you on that.
So, Jonathan, what do you have going on?
Got a great one today. I have this is actually a company. Oh, man. Actually spilled some, but it's not a big deal. A company called, just 1 second. I popped it too soon.
too many choices to choose from. Reaching for the big kid over there, aren't you?
This is I got to pull this up. This is a company out in, or a brewery out in California called Almanac Beer Company. And what's cool about this company, it is a farm to barrel. So everything is done from farm to barrel. They have their farm on the same property. And so everything is done in-house. But this is a Almanac barrel aged in oak. Mm-hmm. You pull up my stream here.
Oh, it's actually fizzing too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So, big time.
Yeah, that looks really appealing.
So you could tell that's a very natural beer when you pop it and it just starts fizzing off the top like that.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
10% ABV.
Yeah. Jumping up there quick today. I like that.
Getting the weekend started early, aren't you?
That's right. I like it. Yeah, we favor pretty strong beverages here on Persuasion by the Pint, Felix. So, yeah. All right, I guess I'll go next. So in honor of the 4th of July All-American Weekend that has been canceled in most places, although we're so our parade here was canceled, but we're doing our own parade. And we got like 100 cars lined up. So
that's a nice lineup.
Breaking the law, baby. All right. So in honor of that, I've got from Oddside Brewing, I've got Beer Me American Lager.
Oh, Beer Me.
Yeah. That one's Beer Me. Good over too.
Oddside. I love that can. That's a very patriotic 4th of July can for sure.
Yeah, that's a very...
flag and everything. Very nice.
Big talons on there, like eagle. Yeah, this is as American as... In fact, it's so 4th of July that I did not bring a glass. I'm just going to pop it straight out of the can in my Yeti overpriced, good old corporate America Yeti koozie. Like there's nothing that says fresh beer like a $25 koozie, right? So like
there you go.
Going that's all the way with American culture here. I do have a Bucky's koozie. I couldn't decide between the two if I was going to use Bucky's or this, but I went with the Yeti. So
Bucky's has a local feel. You should have gone with Bucky's.
Yeah, well, Yeti's here too. Yeti's actually here in Austin too.
Oh, I didn't know that.
So
everything.
So you got some choices there.
Yeah. So anyway.
Let's go. Cheers.
Cheers, gentlemen.
And mine comes in a very weak 4.5%. So just.
Yeah, mine's a slight over a 5.1. I think Jonathan takes the edge on that one.
Yeah, for sure. A little
bit. Doubles both of us.
All right. So here's the moment of truth. We, Felix, we do a pint scale from 1 to 5. Five being the best. So on a scale of 1 to 5 pints, what do you give your Peroni?
I give it a 4. Ooh, I think it's up there. It's pretty good. Yeah.
I would agree with you. It's a good score.
Peroni is definitely one of the better ones.
Yep. It's a good beer.
How about you, Sean? What do you think of Peroni?
I don't know that I've ever had one, to be honest. I may have to add that to my list now, but... But as for my American lager, I'll give it a solid 2 because I'm not a lager fan, but I had to do it for the weekend.
Sure.
Lagers are just kind of, reminds me too much of like my first beer. Like, you know what I mean? It's like actually a little cringy when you first drink it that first time.
Not as smooth.
Yeah. Not
those
that smooth.
Those 2 points were all from the can, right? That's
absolutely. Sweet. Yeah.
A well-designed can is actually what gave it the 2 points.
That's right. Yeah. So that's
again, marketing right there. He grabbed it. You know, he saw grabbed the American flag.
Had that appeal to it.
Yeah. American lager on an American weekend. Eagle flag talons. Yeah. Like I just couldn't resist. So, so I only have, the good news is I only need to buy it once a year. So that's good.
Yeah. Just put it in the stock and then pull it out once a year in July.
And thank goodness for like, singles 6 packs, right? Cause I don't have to drink more than one of them. So yeah, solid, 2.
Solid to, 2. Wow.
Solid 2 to 1.5 maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. All right. So, before I give my rating, I got to mention, I'm mentioning our sponsor, which I failed to do, and that is from the Craft Beer Club. And just give you a little background on them. This company is really good. They I've used their service a number of times with some of my customers and sending out. But what they do is kind of a monthly membership. They search out the most exceptional craft beers from around the country and deliver these to you on a monthly basis, direct to your door or to anyone that you choose to give a gift to. And like I said, these are great gifts. I give a lot of these away during the holidays to a lot of my clients, and they do a fantastic job. So if you get on the, if you want to learn more, you would go to persuasionbythepint.com/craft beer. And I got to say that earlier because by the end of the show,
I'll forget.
Yeah. So let me give your my score. Rating real quick on the Almanac. I'm pretty disappointed in it because I was expecting something not as hoppy, and this is really hoppy. So, so the fact that it was a bourbon barrel aged ale that kind of led me in, and the fact that it was farm to brew, I guess farm to barrel. I kind of encouraged me to try it, but it, man, this is so hoppy. So,
man, they pushed all your buttons. I got both of us this week.
I'm going to have to match Sean with a 2. Maybe I give it a 2-1 just to up Sean, but I'll give mine. Okay. It's a 2-1. I'll give it that.
Wow. It's a tie. We have a tie. We need a tiebreaker.
I was disappointed, man. I spent like $12 on this beer. One bottle. Golly.
Goodness. That's a real letdown there. When you invest in the everything and then
your expectations
becomes a 2.
Yeah. So
but it was a story. We're going to talk about, you know, I was programmed. I got hit with my primal brain was hit with a story immediately when I read that. Boom.
There you go. It's the neural networks of associations that came along with it.
Exactly.
So I'm going to try to keep myself muted a little bit, but my dog just lost his manhood this week. So he's in the office with me recovering and he may occasionally bark at his displeasure with me taking his man. I didn't do it. The vet did it, but still he's not happy.
It doesn't matter. You're the person he sees as responsible. So
yeah, no, I let Tamara take him to the vet and pick him up. So it's the association was with her, not me. So I'm just taking care of him and helping him recover. So,
all right.
But anyway, so yeah, let's dive in.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So Felix, why don't you start by telling us a little bit about your background? I gave you an intro. Why don't you share, you know, your background in the industry, you know, how did you get into neuromarketing, this topic? Because this stuff fascinates us. We talk about psychology, persuasion, all that stuff on a regular basis here. You know, Sean's got a background in copywriting. I've been in corporate sales for a long time and marketing. And so we just eat this stuff up. And I know a lot of our listeners do. But why don't you share your background, how you got into this first, and we'll go.
Yeah, sure. So in order to kind of really get to present day, what we'll do is kind of like jump on a time capsule and go 20 years back. So it all started with, education. So, you know, if we were to have this conversation 20 years ago, I'd be in post-secondary, taking, you know, biological sciences and then eventually psychology. So as you mentioned, you know, I have a background in both biological sciences and psychology. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, what really led to the transition to the business world is, you know, also I started in a lot of sales and marketing types of jobs at the time, and then segued into more self-employment that dealt with more finances, investments, and real estate. And, you know, that takes us to about 2010. So we start to look at the landscape and we noticed that just like in the 2000s, you saw, you know, the internet really start to take off, right? So in 2010s, like that's when like the iPhones and Android and all the mobile technologies really start to come to the forefront. So, we took our talents there and we start to really dive into how mobile it at that time was still very in its infancy and premature. So it's more at that time used for entertainment value, such as, you know, there was like a popular game back in like 2011 called like Angry Birds. I'm pretty sure everybody has heard of that. So that's kind of like what really brought mobile to the forefront, especially for like iPhones.
Sure.
And then and we just kind of looked at all the different trends and we knew that's going to percolate beyond just you know, kind of like the entertainment value. Mm-hmm. So more, it will go into the more like the utilities per se. And now you see with everything, you could, you know, manage your camera in front of your house from, you know, the comfort of your phone, right? So, you know, we got involved in mobile, and then, you know, so we built everything from social networks to games, and we partnered up with influencers in terms of bringing their emoji apps to the app store. And then, so that takes us to about 2000 and about 18, 19 in that particular year. And then, so we're starting to look at the trends again. And then, especially in technology, we noticed that AI and VR is really starting to come to the forefront. And right now, it's pretty much like how we're looking at 2010 with mobile in terms of the VR and AI and like machine learning type of transition, right? So, when we looked at what was going on, and we knew that, you know, with Surrey, for example, that was pretty much like the first indication that a lot of these big companies were starting to dip their toes into this kind of new way of it, like, you know, like people socializing and interacting. That's like how the mobile phone was able to connect everybody beyond just your desktop, right? So this is something that would be a lot more immersive. So when we looked at that particular industry and where it was going, that's where we knew that we're at this time, probably at the cusp of another technological revolution. And at the core of a lot of those innovations is actually neuroscience. So, you know, we take, you know, a lot of the research and findings that come with, you know, with technology, we know that we could apply to fields outside of technology as well. And that's why we saw this big opportunity is that, you know, you're taking all these brain research studies and then you're now applying it to the world of marketing. And what really makes this opportunity exciting is because of the timing. So as we've seen in the past that as, you know, trends become a lot more popularized and they become a lot more familiar, then at the same time, also new concepts that are associated with that particular trend also come to the forefront, become popular as well. So that's why right now with neuromarketing and us, and especially with being on the cusp of another technical or technological revolution that involves, let's say, AI and VR, it's the perfect timing to have like neuromarketing come to the forefront. Mm. So that the mass adoption of AI and VR, machine learning and so forth will allow the transition in terms of the adaptation period for this to become, you know, something that's more mainstream.
So go ahead.
I was going to say my 14-year-old just got the Oculus VR.
There you go.
So I'm like, I'm blown away by that, the technology in itself. Because, I mean, I've known about VR for a long time, but yeah, like when you, it's totally different to talk about it than it is to actually experience it. Because
correct,
I just was like, you know, he saved up for this thing. He ordered it. And I'm like, I can't believe you spent, you know, $400 on that thing. But it's your money, you know, he saved up, he worked for it. And, but I put this thing on like last week and he showed me this boxing game and I'm literally looking around. It's like, you're looking around the room and you're inside of a boxing ring. Everything looks so real. It's real. Like you're in a absolutely completely different environment.
Yep.
And yeah, it's amazing what that does to you.
It's that virtual world, right? And that's why it's so immersive, because you can actually interact with a lot of the items and so forth within the system itself. So that's something that's totally different from, let's say, you know, having your phone per se and then interacting just through your phone.
Yeah. Not so to mention, go ahead. I'm sorry. I was going to say, not to mention, I wore myself out on that thing, just fighting.
I bet.
It's good exercise too. It's good amazing exercise, especially when you're playing a boxing game.
Cause it feels like you're really boxing the dude. And and when you're taking shots, you know, you're like, oh man, I just took that hit, you know? So it's like, it's crazy.
Exactly. Yes.
So Felix, can you define, let's back up a second. And can you define neuromarketing? Like how would
So let's look at the word neuromarketing, right? So you have, we'll break it up into two words pretty much. So you have the neuro side, which is like the study of your nervous system. In this case is more so your brain, right? And then you have marketing, which everybody knows is you know, sending your messages out to to your audience based on their brand. So if you combine the two, it's really, you know, how the brain, the body responds to marketing stimuli. So that's like the best way to define it. You know, if we want to get more visual about it, you really have to look at like how the brain is really structured. So the primal brain actually sits at like the bottom of the, or the base of the brain, right? So that's where like a lot of the decision making actually happens, and it happens below the level of consciousness. And all that is rooted into like, you know, emotions, someone's true desires, someone's like true motivations in order to what it is that they're looking to achieve at that time. And all that's driven by, you know, all these subconscious drivers. And we'll go into more of like the primitive instincts that it's looking to fulfill. And then there's certain ways that, you know, it wants information presented to it so that, because it acts as kind of like a gateway and primitive filter in order to pass it on to the more logical part of the brain, which is like the neocortex that sits like on top of the pretty much the top layer of the brain, right?
Right.
So the primal brain is actually responsible or influences up to 95% of a consumer's decision-making process. So that's why it's so important to understand the role of the primal brain in terms of understanding your consumers and then adapting your marketing campaigns and strategies to really, you know, deliver your core messaging in order to optimize, let's say, the conversions or the call of actions and so forth that, you know, you want your consumers to participate in.
Yeah. So why is neuromarketing, or is mm-hmm. it new? Is it, you know, is it an advancement? Like, what's different about this than the direct response strategies we've heard about since the 50s or even before?
Sure. Like, so think about like traditional and like digital marketing in its present time as the what part, whereas okay. now neuromarketing comes in and explains the how and the why. So when you could understand things much on a much more like granular and microscopic level, what you're able to do is come in and make, you know, optimizing adjustments along any point of your the buyer's journey or your marketing strategies so that you could trigger these, let's say, subconscious drivers and match it up with the proper, let's say, marketing stimuli. And that's where you're able to deliver your message so that you're not just talking, let's say, to the logical part of the brain, because the logical part of the brain is actually the last part of your brain that actually receives information. So if you don't deliver in the right way where the brain actually wants it delivered, then the persuasive power of your core messaging greatly diminishes.
Okay. Yeah, there's a lot there. And I feel like we, especially in the direct response world, mm-hmm. copywriting world, I've got a background in copywriting, Jonathan's right. in sales. I've been in mm-hmm. sales most of my life as well. You know, we're kind of taught that early on. So right. Can you give a couple of examples of how neuromarketing specifically has advanced, let's say, you know, marketing in general mm-hmm. in the last 5 to 10 years? Like what have we seen? Like what's actually showing up and influencing us around us right now that is specifically out of this field of neuromarketing research?
Sure. So neuromarketing is something that came about probably about 20 years ago, really about the early 2000s. Right. So, but a lot of the principles were like more in the psychological realm, dealing with like mental issues and so forth, like back in like the 60s and 70s, but it was more confined to like the medical field and so forth. And then it started to really spill into kind of like the business arena and the marketing world. Right. So more recently, say over the last 5 years, or 10 years per se, you know, you had, let's say, companies like Facebook in 2017, you know, they built their own neuroscience center to study marketing. So, you know, all that stuff is like the like button. How do you increase greater engagement, looking more into like the biochemical level of things, such as like exploring like, you know, like the neurotransmitters, dopamine, how to reduce stress hormones like cortisol and so forth. A really good example is actually like, let's say, Campbell's Soup in the early 2010s. So they would, you know, in their labs, they would have participants, let's say they were looking to at that time tap into the female audience. So they're wondering why at that time they were packaging their chips in a shiny bag. And they're wondering why that wasn't appealing to, let's say, the female audience. So what they did was they, you know, created, let's say, like studies where they would actually hook up, you know, a bunch of participants or female participants to, you know, like fMRIs or like EEGs to kind of study what's happening in the brain when they would, you know, be exposed to that shiny bag. And what they're finding was a particular region of their brain, which was associated with guilt, was actually being highly triggered. So from that, so the females on general were actually associated eating Frito-Lay's chips, for example, with guilt. So they, from that study, what they did was actually they modified their chip bags. Instead of making it shiny, they changed to a matte style finish. So that that change in terms of the packaging actually significantly boosted up their sales. And Campbell's, you know, they had the same thing too. They're wondering why they're seeing a dip in sales. So what they did was, at the time they had like a, on their soup can label, they had like this big giant spoon. So they limited that. And then what they wanted to do is make the soup can a lot more humanized. So they added like a human face with, you know, aroma vapors. And roughly in like 2000 and between like the years of like 2008 to 2011, like their sales were, you know, between 7 to 8 billion annually. So with that one change, they're able to increase their sales by 12%, wow. Which when you look at 12% of one or of 8 billion, that's roughly close to a billion in sales, right? Simply by making that change of by being able to go more in depth into why, you know, like what kind of emotions are actually being associated with their brands.
So yeah, help I mean, me, I'm trying to figure amazing. Out how a shiny, I'm still trying to put those two together. How does a shiny bag make someone feel guilty? I must be missing something.
Indulgent, maybe?
Yeah, that's a possibility right there, okay. Too. So like they didn't release too much into like the specifically why that part was actually triggering that part of the brain, but usually it has something to do with either they're associating with something that in their like growing up that's for, you know, more particular prone for females to associate shiny things with guilt, for example.
Okay. Oh, I can. Yeah. Okay. So I've started to get it. Yeah. Shiny objects, mm-hmm. guilt.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. I could see it as, you know, you think it's indulgent. So, you know, having that on a regular basis, you know, a lot of candies wrapped in shiny stuff.
Exactly. Yeah. So this packaging of like kind of food that's really not on the healthy side, right. Especially, yeah, when they're, you know, at that time, the kind of like the health conscious type of movement was starting to come to the forefront. So, you know, that shiny packaging would trigger kind of the childhood memories of like how, you know, everybody used to sit down and kind of binge on candies at that time with the shiny wrappers.
Oh, you think about like Clif Bar, you know, it's in like a paper wrapper, very organic matte paper wrappers. And sure. It's, you know, it's geared towards the outdoor crowd and, mm-hmm. you right. know, stuff I like feel that. Like it's,
so, you're eating something healthy. Right.
Yeah. It's more natural, right? Like when you think about those types of like matte style, it's like almost looking at a tree, like the trunk of a tree. It's this more natural type of association that comes with it.
Yeah, exactly. So, mm-hmm. so, you know, that's when we talk on this show, you know, I'm talking to the listeners here when like all these little things, I mean, they can add up to real dollars. I mean, the fact that, and like, it's kind of what it takes to break through the noise and break out, you know, between you and your competitors and things like that, because people are so overwhelmed. Like if you're not taking advantage of all these little tricks and tactics, mm-hmm. Eventually you get left behind.
Right.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. Yeah. Go ahead, John.
Yeah. So, so I'm curious, how does this relate to, let's get into some politics. This will be fun. So you were, I noticed from reading your bio, you've appeared on radio news, talk shows. Are you from, Canada?
Yeah, from Canada. That's
okay.
Correct.
Okay. So you've apparently you've been on some a lot of news shows recently, mm-hmm. about the 2019 Canadian election. So right. Sean and I don't get a whole lot of news on the Canadian election. We mm-hmm. got our own issues here. So kind of give us an update. I mean, what I'm curious because I'm always following stuff like that. And yeah. what's the relation to politics?
Well, the thing with, so that happened, so that was 2019. So I actually did that, you know, those talks roughly around close to a year now. So right. roughly around September, October, right?
Sure.
But usually, you know, it's just figuring out how do, you know, these different parties appeal to, let's say, a greater audience or, you know, try to pretty much persuade somebody who's kind of on the fence.
Yep.
Because usually when someone kind of picks camps, it's, the target is usually more so effective when targeting the people that are kind of in the middle that haven't really chose yet. So that's why a lot of the neuroscience comes in. Mm-hmm. And is this creating associations with, let's say, the Green Party, which is more associated with, you know, the environment and so forth. And how does that person, you know, start to like create this web of associations, whether it's partnering up with like, you know, environmental influencers, for example, you know, and how, and also like in terms of their campaigns, do they have more the type of emotions that they want to elicit if you belong to that particular group? Mm-hmm. So, you know, you're really looking to like all that stuff on a much deeper level in order to kind of bring them into that kind of like subconscious world. And then that way they're more likely to be more receptive of your messages.
So that's cool. So I'm curious. You said a phrase a couple of times, web of association.
Yeah.
So can you go in a little bit more into that and like how that works? Like, is, I have my ideas about what it means, but I'd love to hear what it actually means instead of me guessing.
Sure. So what it is, so your brain is pretty much this is made of like a bunch of neurons, right? So yeah. Like 100 billion of them. So that's in itself like the biggest web of associations that you have. And that's actually what a brand is. So all a brand is this a neural network of associations. When you think about brand, and it happens, that's why it happens too fast for somebody to be conscious about. And, you know, that could lead to, you know, like impulsive buying and whatnot, right? So when you look at something, that your brand is already being associated with, you know, all these different, you know, who you associate yourself with. And also, let's say it right now, like we're even associating the type of beer that we're having with this type of experience. So, you know, and that's why right now when you're seeing on, let's say, places on YouTube or on Facebook, for example, and they're, you know, really the big companies who are throwing their advertising dollars and they're saying that, hey, YouTube, like, I don't want my ads in front of these types of videos, because they understand the connection that's going to happen between the association that the viewer is going to actually develop between their ad and that particular video or types of video. And, you know, and that's one reason why they understand that they don't want, you know, their ads to be associated with those types of videos because of, you know, for whatever emotional connections that they want to prevent to be attached to their particular brand, right? So it's like a multitude. Like if you look at Coke, you know, Coke is happy, right? So that's why if you look at a lot of their advertising, it's always like, you know, like usually like pretty people, and they're enjoying Coke, they're very happy. And then if you're sitting down and you're having a picnic and you're enjoying a Coke, now you just created another spoke within your web. So not only are you associating now that, you know, that happy Coke commercial, but now you created another association with, let's say, a particular experience where, you know, you're sitting around having a Coke or enjoying it while you're on picnic. So all these different spokes that you're creating, that's what the neural web of association is. So that's why these companies, they're always front of mind, and we call that the mirror exposure effect, right? So what's out there, they're creating all these different all these different associations with their brand, and that's why, you know, that's why you don't forget about that particular brand. And kind of like Yishan, maybe you saw something with the flag and so forth, and then, you know, the whole concept of you know, being patriotism and so forth, it actually activates that neural network of associations. And that was, you know, something that could persuade someone to actually take action to make a purchase or whatever the call of action.
We're back. It's kind of the whole idea behind soap operas, right? I mean, that was the whole, I mean, you were trying to like, here's a show, you're at your home, but, you know, the advertisements matched, you know, the person who was going to be watching those. Mm-hmm. You know, that was kind of the primitive version of, I think, what we're talking about. But yeah, I can see. So what I hear you saying is a lot of these corporations that seem to be reacting to the actual issue are not really reacting to the issue as much as they are. They have somebody somewhere that's like, oh, we don't need pictures of riots or protest next to our, can you say?
Yeah. So what it is that's the correct connection. So it's just priming, right? So you're being exposed to some sort of stimuli, which will influence how someone responds to an identical or similar stimuli in the future. So they don't want somebody to, you know, look at their brand later on and then have images of, let's say, riots and so forth.
Yeah. It's not have a Coke and a riot. It's have a Coke and a smile, right?
So. Yeah, exactly. You know, and Apple's fantastic. If you look at Apple's marketing, they're pretty much the pinnacle of marketing, right? So you look at all their stuff. So you have like the Apple, and then around them, you have a suite of products. And, you know, and then all those suite of products, you have all these different types of memories that come with it. So, you know, they're very good at creating those types of memories. And there's actually a good commercial by HP as well. And, you know, it doesn't really talk about like the HP technology, like the printers or anything like that, but it more taps on like the relationship between, let's say, a father and his child. And then through those, you know, association of that feeling of having that kind of like fatherhood type of good feeling, that now becomes associated with HP. Mm-hmm. So when you're looking for a printer now, you know, and you come across HP, that's what's going to trigger is those network of memories.
And this is happening like
Yeah, we're talking about 50 milliseconds or less. So that's like, just to give you an idea of how fast of that. So you know how fast our eyes blink?
Yeah.
So it's like, it's 10 times that.
Wow.
So just imagine, so that's why this happens too fast for the conscious mind to really become aware of it.
So all of us that think we're being logical about purchases, even when we like, so even when we say like it's an emotional decision backed by rational, you know, logic, mm-hmm. right? That's one thing we've said in copy for years. Like,
right.
You know, it's an emotional decision, but then you need to back it up with logic. What would you say to that? Like how much is, which is which?
Well, let's explore it in terms of the way that the brain's structured and how information physically enters the brain, right? So we were just talking about the very beginning. So you have your brain here. Mm-hmm. So at the very base of the brain, you have your reptilian brain, right? So that's more your physical brain. So it's fast, automatic, reflexive, and it deals with more things like on a, you know, fight or flight type of situation, right? Yep. And then when you ascend upwards from there, you have your midbrain, which deals more with like emotions and social situations. So when you take those two parts of the brain together, that's actually what makes up your primal brain. So the primal brain is actually concerned, its main role is really two things, is to ensure the survival and reproductive success of the individual, right?
Yep.
So it's guided by what we call like six primitive instincts. So, you know, those six primitive instincts, right, are like survival, reproduction, safety, security, sustenance, and status. So that's how it looks at everything. So when it presents information, and this is called a bottom-up type of processing, So when it looks at that, it goes, you know what? Is this new stimuli, is it something that's safe or is it something that's threatening? Because the brain's role really has three roles, right? It wants, you know, it wants information as speed. It wants to be energy efficient, and it's also threat detection. So that's why when you present information, you can't just go, well, here's, you know, all the benefits of it. Mm-hmm. Right. So that's why when you present it, there's certain ways that we call, you know, the seven primal brain friendly messaging components. And there are, you know, novel, visual, safe, fast, simple, tangible, and from a high status position. Right. So when you craft your marketing in that way, you could understand what's the most relevant, let's say, primitive instincts or subconscious drivers, and then choose the ones that meticulously match with the one that is more current for that situation that you're looking to create. And that's in a way, like kind of like it works in a, so to speak, but it's more complicated because the brain is a complicated organ, right? But it's kind of like a key and a lock type of analogy. So once you're able to kind of pass that gatekeeper, which is the primal brain, then what it does is it passes that information to your logical brain. And that's when the cortex starts assessing the information based on, let's say, facts, data, statistics, and numbers. So that's why it's so important to present information like in a certain way. And then that way it's much more, has that persuasive power. And the brain is much more receptive to that core messaging, whether it's like words or images and so forth.
So you, if I heard you correctly, like you use those seven things to mm-hmm. unlock the six things or to bypass.
Yeah, that's kind of like the analogy. Exactly. Yeah. Because the primal brain acts as the gatekeeper, or like kind of like the primitive filter, right? And the reason why is like the cortex, it just consumes so much energy. So it wants to be energy efficient. So because if all that information went directly to your cortex, you totally shut down. There's just too much information coming in. And it actually only handles like, we get, we get about like 11 million bits of information that come in all the time. But the cortex yet only handles about 40 to 50 bits of information. So it's really selective. Wow. So this primitive brain that's why it acts as that gatekeeper. Because now it's being very selective in terms of, okay, is it something that we need to deal with right now? Is it something that will help us increase our chances of survival or reproductive success? And that's how it assesses the environment.
So you're saying there's like 11 billion or 11 million bits of information streaming at us all the time.
Exactly. And your subconscious is processing all that stuff.
And only 40 bits or so can be handled by the reasoning part of the brain at any time.
Exactly. The logical and the more sophisticated logical part of the brain.
Wow. It feels like what you're talking, because mm-hmm. we actually, on this show, we recently went through the book, Thinking Fast and Slow, where he talks about.
By Daniel Kahneman?
Yeah.
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 Where he talks about mm-hmm. the system one, system two. You know, so it sounds like the primal would be like the system one.
That is system one.
Yeah.
System That's one. How he explains it. So, yeah,
exactly.
Mm-hmm. So, So let's do this. Let's talk about some of the things that listeners can use to kind of up their advantage in the marketplace. What are some, what are some ways that they can actually apply this and then, and then do a couple
of things? How do you trigger the primal brain, right?
Can you,
or bypass it actually, I guess.
So after this, I could send a link. Like I actually created an article. I don't know if you would allow that, but it actually talks about exactly how to do that. So, but I'll send it like after I kind of dive into it, but there's several ways that you can use it. Number one is like, as you mentioned, with so many things going on, how do you catch their attention? Because that's the number one thing, right? Yeah. If you can't catch their attention, everything else after that actually just goes in the gutter.
Right.
So what we call it is actually called orientation response, because the primal brain is always looking for new stimuli. And the reason why it does that is because it needs to assess, is that new stimuli, does it increases my chances of survival, or does it increase my reproductive success? For example, you know, if you see, let's say if you're male and you see a pretty girl, for example, then your primal brain goes, oh, you know what, does this increase my chances of, you know, reproduction pretty much, right? Or if you see a particular food source, you're assessing, is that food source, you know, a threat or a non-threat? And then obviously the opposite is true too. If you see, let's say a lion walking down the street, your primal brain is going to automatically be triggered and you're going to be in a fight or flight state of mode. So, you know, and all that stuff, you know, novelty, it actually triggers the release of dopamine, right? Which is like kind of the reward, you know, motivation type of neurotransmitter. So now how do you trigger, let's say, the release of dopamine by creating novelty? And that's by, you know, understanding orientation responses. And one good example is Energizer, for example. Like the Energizer bunny has been around for, what, 30 years? So, well, how do you take a concept that's 30 years old and a bunny that beats on the drum all day long and now make it a little bit novel, right? Yeah. So, you know, so Energizer felt was really innovative in terms of how they did that. So in the commercial, what they did was they had the bunny actually still banging on the drums. And then right in the middle of it, they had this pattern interruption where he turns back to the screen. So now you're oriented and now it catches your attention because this is not something that you've seen all the time. And then what he does is instead of like in his hand, he has like a carrot. And then the saying is, you know, like Energizer lasts longer by like through the power of carrots. Like that's the association that's making. Right. So through that pattern interruption, you know, now you're like, oh, okay, now you caught my attention again. It's not this some bunny that I've seen for the millionth time. And the thing is, which is really cool, is that we're exposed, like in terms of our thoughts and our memories, a lot of it's like repeat, right? So, you know, we get about 12, anywhere between 12 and 60,000, let's say, thoughts per day. But yet, you know, roughly like 90 to 95% of those are repeats. So now that's why when you're looking to create any type of novelty or pattern interruptions, that's why it's so important, because now you break that 95% of all these recurring thoughts that happen over and over again. And that's what Energizer does, because it's like when you first see it, you're like, oh, it's this bunny again. He's probably going to sit there beat on the drum. But then like it turns around and, you know, it's showing that, hey, like not only do I keep on going, but I keep going longer. And the reason why is because, you know, it's the power of this carrot, right? So that's like, that's a really good example in terms of, you know, orientation response. Another good example is Old Spice.
Well, so they had this. To go back to that for a second too, like where does, cause we've talked about familiarity. Mm-hmm. I guess that falls into the safe category, right?
Right.
Because if you've seen it a bunch of times and it doesn't hurt you, then it must be somewhat safe, right? I mean,
that's correct.
Even a tiger or a lion, if I saw a lion come to my camp every day and it never bothered me, eventually I would be like, oh, that's a safe lion, mm-hmm. you know?
That's so correct.
But then it begins to be just boring and old, like you said, with the Energizer bunny. So you got to shake it up a little bit.
Exactly.
Wake up the brain. Oh, I'm familiar with that, but he's doing something different.
Right.
So does it reprocess basically the whole thing?
Yeah. That's why it's called orientation response, because it changes the orientation of that particular. So you kind of like, it's almost like, imagine right now we're sitting and we're viewing something and what we do is we walk five steps, you know, to our left. Mm-hmm. Now our view changes again. So we have to reorient ourselves. So that's why it's called the reorientation response, because that's now it's giving you kind of like a different viewpoint of that particular, let's say this particular ad.
And how often does a brand need to do that to stay, to keep a customer, to like, I mean, like if you're online and you're, you know, you're some type of service provider online mm-hmm. or something like that, obviously you don't have a budget like Energizer. Most of us don't. Yeah. But you're, you know, you're seen by your audience.
Right.
But how often do you need to shift orientation with
so them? With that, like, it depends on, because now the good thing is we have metrics and data, right? So we could look mm-hmm. at when we're running, let's say, a particular Facebook ad, we could see, go in the back end of the manager and see like how it's responding and so forth, and see, is there like, is it really, are people fatigued from seeing the same thing over and again? So there's really no time frame that you could allocate that, but you'll know that the moment you'll start to see attention and engagement go down, then that's when you got to like tweak something up.
Yeah. Have you, read the book Impossible to Ignore by Carmen Simon?
Not yet, but that's on my list. But
I'm in the middle of that. And this reminds me of that, because you talked about pattern interruption, and this mm-hmm. is, that's the whole point of the book, is like, you got to, the way you get people from ignoring, you know, keep people from ignoring you, because people get, the brain gets complacent. You know, you just keep seeing the same thing over and over. Just like Sean said, the lion, you see the same lion every day that's not bothering you. And so you just get accustomed to that. And what people have to do, I mean, the whole book's about pattern interruption and how you do that. And mm-hmm. it's mostly from a content standpoint. So like content marketers, people that are marketing on content through social media and things like that, how they've got to start adjusting, you know, with images or their content to almost get people to interrupt, you know, interrupt that train of thought. Almost to the point where sometimes you're even intentionally making mistakes in your content that interrupts people's train of thought, you know? And mm-hmm. I was talking to a friend of Sean and I, Ben Blackman, this morning. He's a friend of ours that does a lot of Instagram and Facebook marketing. And he says, you know, he's got clients that sometimes they'll make mistakes and say, do I need to correct this? And he says, no. Keep it like that, because that's almost a pattern interruption that makes your ad different. So don't change it.
Yeah.
You know, keep it the same.
Exactly. Or so you got to add like action trigger words, right? That are kind of different from maybe words that you normally use.
Yeah.
So, you know, words like, I'll just like examples like danger, avoid, that really trigger the primal brain, because once again, it's mm-hmm. main role is to ensure your safety and survival, right? So like those types of words will automatically, you'll want to look at it right off the bat, because you'll see like, oh, is this, you know, even though it's on the screen and it's technically not a real danger, but the primal brain does not understand that. So, you know, it doesn't have that capability, those neurons to process on that high level. So that's why it catches people's attention right away.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's important to things like SEO and even like copy and things like that too. Mm-hmm. But yeah, making, you know, purposely like making mistakes and stuff like that on the spelling, or whatnot, then yeah, people will look at it because it's something that stands out.
Well, Ben Settle, you know, he does that a lot. I don't know if you know Ben Settle, Felix. He's a mm-hmm. copywriter, but he's big on intentionally and this is kind of an old trick from some older copywriters as well that he picked up, but from the newsletter crowd. And that is you intentionally misspell things and you come up with almost with your own language. Mm-hmm. So like, for instance, one, he spells experts like X spurts with a U. Right.
And so that's interesting. Yeah.
Right. So it's kind of making fun of experts by saying they're spurting, like, again, and it gives you a visual too, right? They're just spurting nonsense. And he does all these little things like that so when you're reading his stuff, one, you're reminded, and because most people don't write that way, every day when you read his stuff, it's a new pattern interrupt, even though it's the same for him all the time. Nobody else is doing it.
Sure. Exactly. So that's how he stands out, right?
Yeah.
By doing that.
That kind of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. And communication is the same way too. Like I was, you know, I haven't like this, you could ask, you know, is someone like, or is your name Keith, but you know, their name is Keith, and it automatically triggers me and it gets their attention, for example.
Right.
So that's the same idea as, you know, kind of purposely misspelling certain words so that you could pull them in and really catch their attention.
Yeah, and it gives the grammar Nazis something to do as well. You know.
Exactly. So they could come in there and be like, "Well, this is, you know, it's not spelled with the U."
You know, you misspell. That's U-O, Y-O-U-R.
Exactly. But you got that type of engagement, and then you know you can reroute it back to the attention that you want, right? And you see that a lot of times, like media does that particularly well, where it's something and they create a lot of controversy, and then all of a sudden it kind of like flattens out to like more of like the let's say, more mature type of message, but they had to do something where if they knew that they kind of threw out that mature message, it would just fit in with everything else and people would just, you know, just gloss over it.
Yeah, I've started, like, when I make a typo in like a graphic or something that I post on social media, now, like, in the first comment, I'll be like, I'll say bonus points if you can find the typo. Yeah. So now
it's like engagement.
Now, like, forces them to back up. If they didn't see it, they look at it twice because, you know, they see the comment. Mm-hmm. And it's just fun. And it gives me a good excuse to have a typo without having to redo the graphic. So
that's a good way to keep them engaged, right? It's, you know, rather than have them, the audience, be in a passive mode, now you're able to engage them on some level and then they're not actually looking through to find that, that error.
Hyperbole works really well too in this because, you know, mm-hmm. you just talked about, you know, the media is very good at this, but even politically, I mean, you can see this in politics all the time. There's a lot of hyperbole, but it's a pattern interrupter that says somebody makes a really bold statement. That's like, wait a minute, what? You're like, but it gets you thinking. So it attracts attention. And then, then it gets people arguing about whether that's true or not. Well, you've already fallen prey to the pattern interruption because what you've done is you're actually discussing whether this bold hyperbole is actually true or not. And you're going back and forth. Meanwhile, the attention's already been drawn to that whole point. So,
exactly. And there's a neuroscience explanation too for that because the primal brain actually sees things in terms of binary.
Sure.
So it's either good or bad, threatening, non-threatening, right? And so forth. Because it needs to make quick decisions. It doesn't have to be like, oh, you know, you see a lion and it assesses that because you might be, you know, back in the days in the desert, you know, like probably our ancestors wouldn't fare too well if they had to like sit there and think rather than, you know, pick up their shoe, like run down. So that's why when they're creating kind of like on the opposite end of the spectrum, that type of kind of really bold statement. So now you have, we are here, almost like a before and after picture. So the primal brain kind of has like no choice but to gravitate towards it and try to make sense of it. Is this, you know, like, what is this? Is there truth to it? Like, so it's trying to make that decision. And that's why it focuses on that binary type of, or contrast that dichotomy that exists between, you know, what we know now versus what they're telling you. That might be a little bit of a stretch of the imagination.
Sean comes from the financial news industry or the financial services industry.
Oh, and awesome. That's,
you know, that's you. I mean, Sean's, you've done copywriting in that. So, I mean, that's full of, you can read, you know, why the end of America or the end of the economy's coming, you know, next year every day, you know, and why it's going to happen. So
it's exhausting. Yeah. the financial newsletter industry, not like the, not the Smith Barneys and those kind of things, but the publishing industry in the financial world. It'll wear you out. Like if you follow that every day and it keeps your brain on high alert. Like every message you have to at least filter it because it sounds so dangerous and so, you know, you're going to lose all your money or, you know, it's crazy. So,
and so it's uncertainty, right? That comes with it too. So you're looking to figure that out and try to, you know, bring some, what we call homeostasis or bring it back to normal. How do I go from a state of uncertainty to now like getting some sense of control and certainty back in my life?
Yeah, certainty is only $47 a year. That's
subscribe now.
every time. So, what's one more tip? Then we'll wrap it up. But and you can give us the link for where people can find out more about you. But what's one more tip that you could give?
I think priming is absolutely huge. You know, once again, just to define that you're just being exposed to a stimuli, and then that stimuli will influence how somebody responds to, you know, a stimuli that's related or identical sometime in the future. A perfect example of that is American Idol. So, you know, this is before they have like new sponsors. I think it's like Dunkin' Donuts or something right now. But, you know, Coke, they were the sponsor, and they would purposely, like, you'll see them on their, like, the judges' table. And they would have some sort of beverage, right? So now they're creating, you know, American Idol with Coke. So what's going to happen is when you get thirsty on a subconscious level, that's probably going to be the first thing that comes to mind when you want to quench your thirst. So, you know, just being able to strategically place your your messages, your products, and your visuals will have like a big impact in terms of your bottom line and your ability to persuade people. Because that escapes a lot of people's perception, right? Like, why does that person have a Coke bottle? Why isn't it something else? So now it's, I think, Dunkin' Donuts. I could be mistaken there, but it's something where, you know, it's, it has a deal with a particular brand that that they want to associate with the show.
And that's interesting because a lot of people would be like, oh, that doesn't affect me. What would you say?
Well, that's one of the things when it comes to marketing, right, is understanding that the primal brain is much more stronger than and powerful than the rational brain. And in fact, what's kind of like sophisticated with the brain is actually they have drives that are in conflict of each other. So the primal brain, it's more impulsive. It wants things now, right? Mm-hmm. Whereas the logical part of the brain or the cortex, it's more sophisticated. It wants things. It's able to plan for long term. So now you kind of have this balance between like, okay, well, I want things now, almost like a little kid, versus like, well, if I delay instant gratification, you know, what's the potential, you know, results that could come with that too. Sure. But on the most part, your primal brain will win probably, you know, a bunch of times much more than your rational brain. Yeah. Is this simply because it's the way that the brain's designed? Yeah. And then once we, you know, and it's really fast. So remember, like within 50 milliseconds or less, like it's able to bring up all those networks of associations, you know, process environment cues, rewards, all that stuff within that fraction of a second. And that's why when, you know, people say, you know, I'm not influenced by it, like all that stuff is working under the hood, so to speak.
Yeah. Amazing. So you had a link you wanted to share.
Oh, yes. Right here. So just give me a second. So this was actually just released 2 days ago. I wrote a guest blog on, have you heard of the company drift.com?
Yeah.
So I'll just send it right here. So that was 2 days ago. So what it does is it goes into what neuromarketing is, you know, how the brain actually drives consumer behaviors. And then it actually goes in depth into the 7 primal brain, friendly messaging components that, you know, various companies are using in neuromarketing. So this will be a good starting point for, you know, people just to get a better understanding of, you know, neuromarketing and how it's actually changing like the marketing landscape.
Cool. We'll add that link to the show notes page, which is over persuasionbythepint.com. So you can find it there when this episode posts, probably what, Monday or so. Yeah, Monday. So, so I'm excited to read that and, looks good. Cause when you said the 6 and the 7, like my copywriter brain was like, okay, where's my swipe file to add that to it? Cause that sounds like good stuff right there. Sure. So I'm excited to read that.
Perfect. And also the blog too, if you go to my website, happybuyingbrain.com. So I post on the blog as well. I just released one today, actually, and it talks about like the role of, you know, oxytocin, cortisol. So oxytocin is this neurotransmitter that's in trust. So that's how brands build trust. And you want to obviously elevate that within your customers as well and their clients that you work with. But it doesn't work by itself. It's like how the brain has many moving parts, right? So you have to consider like someone's social situation. And is that situation, does it create a lot of stress for them and so forth? And now how do brands really leverage that type of knowledge to you know, create like the positive emotions that are associated with their brand so that it helps their consumers or the clients, you know, achieve the best version of themselves by satisfying a lot of those primitive instincts.
And that was happybuyingbrain.com.
Give me a second here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. I found it. So, yeah.
Okay. You got it.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. I read some of your blogs there. Those are really, well written. You should write more of those.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah. We're going to beef it up. We've just had so much demand and so forth. So, yeah. You know, but we're definitely going to beef up our content as well. That's one of the main things over the next, you know, several months is you'll Absolutely. Be seeing a lot more posts on the blog and also like YouTube and everything.
Fantastic. All right.
Yeah. Well, Felix, so hopefully, thanks. You know, you guys and your audience found this, you know, helpful and,
yeah, it was, and it's practical always fascinating. As well.
Love this topic.
Good stuff. Yeah. Well, Felix, thanks for joining us again. We appreciate your time. Sean's holding up his empty can. And
so that means the show's over.
My glass is empty too. So it's
done. All right. This will be done too.
Wow. We've been nursing that one, man. But thanks for coming on. Yeah, we'd love to have you back on again sometime, but this has been, this is always a fascinating topic. So, appreciate
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me on, Jonathan and Sean. I definitely appreciate our time together and, you know, it's, hopefully we'll be able to hop on another show sometime soon, and we'll be able to dive into a lot more deeper with more examples as well.
Very good. Sounds good.
All right. Thanks so much, Felix. Have a great weekend. Enjoy your 4th of July.
Same with you too. Bye-bye.
Thanks. No, that was fascinating. I love, I could talk that all day, and it really lines up with that book, and we'll talk about it a little on our next episode. This some takeaways from it, this impossible to ignore, creating memorable content to influence decisions. You know, pattern interruption, that's so important in this day and age where we're just bombarded with messages.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, all right. Well, I guess that means it's time to grab another beer, and we'll see people on the next episode.
All right. Sounds great. Thanks for listening. As always, you can find us over at persuasionbythepint.com and find us on all of your podcast platforms. And also, we are now in, we had a Facebook page, but now we've got a Facebook group. If you go to facebook.com/groups/persuasionbythepint, we'll be posting a link. You can join our Facebook group. Don't charge anything, Sean.
No.
Free to join. So,
and worth every penny.
Absolutely. Thanks again, guys. We'll see you on the next episode.